Of your mind, the MLW Radio Network presents the MSL and Sullivan Show. Now your hosts, MSL and Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome everyone to MSL and Sullivan. Mr. St. Laurent here, joined as always by the architect, the taskmaster, the devil, if you will. He's the crab hunter. He's all over the place. Kevin Sullivan, what's going on, man?
M, how are you doing? And I'm going to make a cry for appeal. Our friends out there are very powerful. They put us in a nice little slot.
Oh, yeah, you're about to go on a trip that we can't talk about. Maybe we'll talk about it next week. Yeah, a lot of stuff is going on, man.
Yeah, a lot of stuff, but I want our friends to come up with a way. I'll go anywhere in Europe, Australia, New Zealand. We'll go anywhere, me and them. We want to do the show in Europe.
You want to go to Europe? Now, how long has it been since you've been in Europe?
Well, we used to go every year, two or three times a year. I used to go on Linda's birthday to Paris.
Linda, so, of course, is your wife for the fans that don't know.
Yeah. So we would go to Paris on her birthday. So we haven't, and I have very good friends in Spain, and we used to go there for Thanksgiving in the little town we used to go to. He owned a mountain. He bought it 40 years ago. We kind of got like a little Thanksgiving Day dinner going in Marara, Spain. But I haven't been in a couple of years, so I'd like to go back. I'd like to take you. I'd like to take you, maybe the Champs-Élysées or the Bay, Shannon Bay, or anywhere.
Wow. This sounds crazy. Now, I don't know much about Europe. Yeah. I do know a big controversy right now, and I don't even know when the vote is, so maybe by the time people hear this, it'll have already happened, of England wanting to leave the European Union. I don't know if it's a good idea or a bad idea, because I'm completely ignorant, but your thoughts as a traveled European tourist.
Okay, let me tell you the whole story on that, the European Union. The European Union is a good idea because it broke down barriers and broke down, you know, there's no borders in Europe anymore. You just drive through. Before, I took my kids the last year, there were borders, and the last year they had their own money because I wanted them to experience that. But the whole time everybody else gets on the euro, the English didn't. So right away, to me, the English knew something or foresaw something that none of the other countries have. Greece is having a problem. We know Spain's having a problem. We know economically. And the English never got on the euro. So technically, in my head, they really weren't in the union. If you don't have the same money, you know what I mean?
Right.
You're still saying, my money's worth more than your money. And it did affect people dramatically, because I used to go to Italy every year. And we went to Sicily one year for a month. And we sent some dishes back. And the lady, we had been there before. And the lady said, I hope you realize you're paying more now for shipping than you used to pay 2 years ago for all those dishes you bought.
So is this kind of like when, for years, the WWF was technically still a member of the NWA, but they still had their own world champion? They weren't featuring the NWA world champion, and they just, you know, the WWF world title, they just wouldn't use the word world, and therefore they were in compliance with the NWA bylaws. But basically getting the benefit of being a member without giving anything up. I mean, that's what it reminds me of.
Only you, M, could come up with a wrestling analogy to Euros and Sterling. Absolutely right. No, that's absolutely right. Here's the thing. I told you this before, and I get a kick out of telling the story to our friends. Maybe they've heard me, maybe they haven't, maybe they're new listeners, because you got a special going on at MSL radio. So I'm going to just say this. When I was a kid, you're absolutely right. They didn't announce on TV that Bruno was the world champion. They said WWF champion, right? But in the ads, it said World Heavyweight Championship, right? WWF champion Bruno Sammartino. So they kind of blurred the lines in the advertising. You get what I'm saying?
Right. Well, and it would have been easier for the NWA to keep track of what was being said on TV as opposed to, you know, back then WWF still had towns where there was a different guy in charge of that town. He was the promoter for that town. And it gives you some plausible deniability of the WWF can just say, oh, well, you know, that was Savoldi's town or whatever. We didn't know he was going to put World on the poster. We didn't do it.
You hit it on the head. I used to work for Savoldi in some towns. He'd pay me cash. Arnold Skoland had, you know, part of New York, the outlying area of New York, the suburbs, you know. So he'd pay you cash. There was a guy in New Haven, Connecticut that had been a wrestling Italian guy, had a great restaurant, a beautiful daughter. I was very young. I mean, there was different promoters. I mean, so in a lot of the towns, you got paid in cash from these promoters. So they could get away with their doing. But where I was going with this was, I remember I used to read the sports column. This guy's name was John Gahooly. And he was really hard on the Red Sox. But he went to Florida for a vacation, and then he comes back, and this is in the paper where you didn't get to see a lot about wrestling, right? He had a whole column about he was in Tampa, and he went to the matches, and he found out that Bruno wasn't the real world champion. The real world champion was a guy called Dory Funk, wore a West Texas Letterman jacket, and his crazy brother was on the card. And to him, it looked more real than Bruno's match against Bull Ramos.
Now, a couple things I want to ask about this week. Okay. I just ran an indie show over the weekend, and you know, obviously, this is on a very, very small scale compared to when you were running, you know, whether it was Florida territory or running WCW. And this is something that always comes up when you look at, you know, fans come up with lots of good booking ideas. We, you know, even on this show or the other MLW podcast, when people say companies should do this, companies should do that, and one of the things that's often overlooked is no matter how good your plan is, there's always going to be injuries, there's going to be no shows, there's going to be contract problems, especially more in the WCW era, because WWF now runs everything at such a tight ship. You know, guys are afraid to sneeze, they might, you know, lose their spot. But so the show they ran this weekend, one of my business partners wasn't able to make it. I had a lot of talent that didn't show up. I had talent that did show up, but having personal problems, a lot of drama going on. And I just couldn't help but think, you know, obviously this is small potatoes, but in WCW, especially in periods where it started to get off track a little bit, can you talk a little bit about the difficulties as a booker where no matter how good your plan was, there's just monkey wrenches being thrown at you?
Sure. And the other thing that I've seen since I've traveled around, and there's more drama at independent shows.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Than there was ever in a major, you know, the major companies. The drama in the independent shows is so far over the top, it's almost like a sitcom. You know, if you sit back and watch it, this guy doesn't want to work with this guy because he doesn't book him on a show that he runs 30 miles away, and this guy isn't going to work with this guy because he stiffed him. But getting back to what you said, here's the main thing you got to realize. You got two guys walking in the room if it's a singles match. One of them is going to be happy with you. One of them is going to be pissed at you. So, and you can have the – I love our friends – out there that are listening that have great ideas, and a lot of our friends and listeners are a lot more intelligent than a lot of people that have met my lifetime, and not just wrestling fans. But here's the thing. You call in a Sid Vicious, who looks like King Kong at the time, and you ask him to put a 5'9" guy over, you better have some gojones to be able to back that up. You know what I'm saying? Because that, you're asking now, you're putting a guy in a position where he's going to look at you like, what are you thinking? You know what I mean?
So how did that request go down?
I just said, listen, I'm going to ask you to do a favor, Sid. This isn't knocking you out of the box. I believe in this guy. I want to get him over, and he's going to have a run. And I told him right up front, he'll end up dropping the belt back to you or Nash. And because, Sid, I think your big money is to be a babyface against the NWO. And he said, well, for you, I'll do it. He believed that I was going to keep my word. And I would have if I had stayed. But, you know, and then the other thing is, you know, people say, well, this could happen. Back in the day, WCW, I told you, I had a guy that was working in Texas once a week for an independent show after the Von Erichs had closed. They had, I forget who opened up the territory. It might have been Skander or Akbar and Gary Hart, but they were trying to do the new world class. And this star for WCW was working in Texas, and he was making $75 a week. I think I've told this story before. And inside of 2 years or 3 years, he was making $400,000. And I had pushed him, and he was really a great guy. But I had him on TV in a spot I needed him to be there, because on Monday nights I needed everybody was important, from the guy that put up the ring to the announcer to the wrestler to the guy, Klondike Bill, that tore the ring down to Jody counting it. I mean, everybody had to be on the game.
I want to talk just a little bit more about Sid Vicious, because he's a guy that's in the business that I think the public perception is very different than the truth, and doesn't necessarily have the best reputation for some reasons that I consider unfair. So let me say, and I definitely want to get your experience with him, but, you know, when I was spending a lot of time with Hall and Nash, they were real tight with Sid. For all I know, they still might be. But at the time, any project we were involved in, they would always throw out Sid's name. Hey, man, we should get Sid involved. Let's call Sid. And I did deal with Sid quite a bit over, you know, the course of 6 or 12 months. And I always found with Sid, and he's a guy that, let's be honest, if he had a good manager, advisor, agent, whatever you want to say, he definitely left millions of dollars on the table in his career, in my opinion.
Millions.
Millions. But he was a guy that was very principled. I guess you could maybe say even paranoid about not wanting to feel like he was getting screwed. He definitely had trust issues. Right. And, you know, let's face it, a lot of promoters are dishonest. And sometimes, you know, you could get lied to and make a million instead of 1.2, or you can get mad that you were lied to and sit at home and make zero. And he was the kind of guy that would prefer to make zero instead of being lied to, instead of just making what you can. And in a way, that's almost noble. But I do think it caused there to be this perception that Sid was difficult or Sid didn't do business. No, I think Sid just put his foot down when you didn't do business.
Okay, I'm going to try to make this really, when I say what I'm going to say, this first sentence, I want people to go, wow, I didn't ever think of it like that. You know, everybody talks about Nash and Hall being so protective of their spot, right? And Nash and Hall don't want anybody threatening them. Am I correct, Em?
People have that perception, yeah.
Okay. Why the hell would I bring a heel in that looked like Sid if I was so protective of my spot? They knew if they brought Sid in, it was going to help them on their cards. You know what I'm saying?
And we've told the story before that they pushed for Yoko to come in several times. Hall and Nash, in terms of them being protective of their spot, they were more protective of the influence they had. And I think in their mind, if the other big stars were their allies, they weren't threatened by having a Sid on the card because it's their buddy. It actually grows their power.
Absolutely. It's that I tell you how smart they were. They could have killed Hogan on those first set of interviews. But if you look at it, psychologically, if you look at the interview, they're standing in back, looking smaller and giving Hulk the middle between the two of them, looking larger than life and acting cool. And they helped edit the tapes because I was there to make Hogan look cool. They bring in Sid Vicious to make him, to make the territory better. And I'll get you, you know, you got to go back to Sid started in Memphis. It's Kearney there. You know that.
Yeah.
It's Kearney. So he got conned. He had trust issues. He was a big guy that thought Hogan was going to put him over and give him his boots. That's how much they thought of Sid in the WWE. RF at the time, but it didn't work out. Sid left a lot of money on the table. I never had a bit of problem with Sid. Sid was easy to do business, and that night that I called him in to drop the World Heavyweight title was not an easy night for me because everybody in the office was saying to me, you can't do this. And I said, yes, I'm going to.
Do you think there was an element to trying to figure out how to word this in the most respectful way? Because, you know, there's some guys in not just in this business, but in life, there are some guys that their strong suit is not their cunning and their savvy, and they're not aware of it. And so they're more susceptible to getting worked because they think they know it all. I always found Sid to be a very nice man.
Right.
I don't know if there were confidence issues or not, but I got the sense that Sid realized that he might not be the sharpest shark in the room. And therefore his defense was up even more because he didn't want anyone to try to take advantage of him. You know,
great,
and,
great.
Okay.
M.
And I'm trying not to insult the guy here.
No, I know you're not insulting him, and I'm cutting you off because you hit the point. That is brilliant. That is brilliant. And Sid was always afraid that, okay, if I do what you say, what you tell me after is going to happen is bullshit.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's bullshit. And I told both of them, okay, you're going to win the title, but I don't know how many months it's going to be, but figure six, no longer than 8 or 9, because I'm a heel booker. I'm going to put one of these monsters over you, and I'm kind of leaning to putting Sid over you, with you, because A, you'd make Sid's work look a lot better, because at that time I was paying attention to our friend Meltzer, right? I was paying attention to Dave's little 4-star thing, match of the year, Kevin Sullivan, right? So Benoit, he carried me. So, but I was paying attention, and I figured he could drop in the title. Benoit would give a performance of a lifetime and raise Sid. And if he did that, Sid could have been, you know, in my head, I saw Sid winning the belt, him in the middle of the ring raising it, the music plays, here comes Nash and Hall, and the Joker, meaning six, right? And they say, brother, you got to come with us. And then playing into just what you said, he realizes he's not as clever as Scott and Kevin, and most people aren't. Let me rephrase that again. No, let me just say the same phrase, but I want you people to listen to me. I've been around a long time. I've never seen but a few people as clever as Kevin and the big man, Tarzan.
I mean,
okay?
It's Scott. One of the best educations I could have ever had because I just being around, like, you will get eaten alive if you do not up your game. You know what I mean? And then you're around everybody else, and you just feel like you're in the Matrix because you've gone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everything else slows down.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The only thing I'm glad that they didn't hang around with Mark Lewin like I did. Whoa, boy. I could see Mark manage them. Boy, it'd be 48 minutes of them or a 12-hour, an hour show, and they'd have all kinds of advertisement on their back, on the heels of their boots, everything. I mean, but what I'm saying was, so I saw Kevin and Scott and Kid coming down congratulating Sid, right? And doing exactly what you said, let art imitate life, where, oh, shucks, guys, I don't know, you know. And Sid didn't have to change his style of work, and he, you know, he could still be the crazy psycho Sid, but he just doesn't want to go with these con artists, and they leave him laying. And you could have had a series, and Benoit could have came back and been his partner. I mean, it could have got those guys in the mix, you know what I mean? A six-man with Eddie, Benoit, and Sid against six-pack Hall and Nash. Now, these terms that supposedly they use, the vanilla midgets, are going to be dispersed.
Wait,
now
in this fantasy scenario, I guess you're getting Kid to jump back, man, because he's in DX at this point.
Yeah,
so we're waving
a
magic wand to get the kids back.
Yeah, yeah.
I want us to dig into the mailbag a lot this week, because you're about to go on this mysterious trip, which we'll talk about more next week. I just don't. It's not appropriate to talk about it yet. We don't know what you're up to. I mean, you might be opening a car wash in Saskatchewan. We don't know what's going on. But so I want to catch up on the mailbag before you go. I know you're packing up and stuff today. So the first question, and you can send your questions to mailbag@mlw.com. The first question is from Alfred, and he wants to know if you think that Scott Steiner, I'm assuming this question is about them in their primes. Could Scott Steiner have overpowered Brock Lesnar? Who was the better, amateur wrestler in your opinion?
Well, I'm just going to go on the records that they had. Scott was a great amateur wrestler, but he didn't win the heavyweight NCAA championship. Brock did. So, I mean, to me, you could almost flip a coin, but it kind of goes to Brock in my head because he won that.
Well, yeah, and he was, you know, UFC heavyweight champion of the world, NCAA champion. It's just, you're just on another level. I mean, the Steiners, I'm sure, were both great wrestlers, but Brock was the best. So, I mean, we have these accolades for a reason, and I'm certainly not an amateur wrestling expert, but I would have to go with Brock. Next question is from Chris. Want to know what I would think of getting rid of the IC and US titles and instead having Raw and SmackDown champions because they've got this brand split going on. You know, to be honest with you, Chris, I don't like it, and here's why. And this actually goes back to I've always disliked a television title to begin with, or even independents that don't have TV. They have internet titles. This stuff is so silly to me because you have to ask yourself, what are you the champion of? Okay, so if you're literally just the champion of a television show, that doesn't sound very prestigious to me. I mean, you know, we just had the Cleveland Cavaliers crowned as the NBA world champions. They are not, you don't have one team is the NBA on TNT champion, and then the other team is the NBA on ESPN champion. So the whole idea of being a champion, or if even in TNA, we look at the X division. So you're the champion of X. What does that mean? So I like to keep things simple. I like to keep things logical. If they are going to have two world champions, maybe they're going to go back to what they did before, where one was WWE, one was World, which really meant that one was WWE and one was WCW. But just someone being called the SmackDown champion, that doesn't sound very prestigious to me. What do you think, Kevin?
Well, I'm going to go to two things. You know, you were saying about I saw a cartoon one time where there was a big N, and it showed these, like, Aztec Indians looking at each other, and they were saying, I didn't know nothing was sacred. You know what I mean? Is nothing sacred? You know the expression.
Right.
Well, I'm with you. I think that, okay, you're the champion of Raw, and this is no disrespect to a friend that wrote it in, but I think, you know, you're saying get rid of the Intercontinental in the U.S. title. I'm with M. There's too many titles. I don't even like the idea, M, of two world titles.
I hate the idea of two world titles, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a stickler for, you know, one world title. I think if they go back to doing something that goes back, you know, you always bring up a word that I really like is, you know, when you say that we need to work together so we have a symbiotic relationship. Okay. And the other thing you bring out, and this is where announcers miss it, the lineage. Where it originated.
Look at it right
who
now.
Who had it first?
They're talking right now about the tag team champions and that they're about to set the record for longest champions. And they're referring to the lineage of, like, the old SmackDown tag team title and ignoring the original world tag team title. I guess they think it makes it sound important to say you're the longest, but they've basically have removed like 30 years of their tag team title history. It's ludicrous.
Well, here's the problem, and I'm going to be basically really honest here and probably piss somebody off. They have, you know, wrestling's oral history, and they burnt, as I always say, they burnt down the library at Alexandria.
Yeah.
How the pyramids were built. Now we've gone from a generation of guys giving guys rubs and also a generation of guys learning from somebody, excuse me, the right way to do things, to guys who have no idea, being writers who have know nothing about the history of wrestling. If you said to them, excuse me, I've came back with a bad cold. If you said to them, Luthes, never mind Baron Leone, you know what I mean? They wouldn't even know
Barry Horowitz.
Yeah, they don't get it. It's like I'm a huge, you know why I'm really a huge baseball fan? First of all, I went as a kid, okay?
Well, and you're a history buff, and that's the game that pays the most respect.
And that's
to history.
What baseball is history. It went before Barry Bonds broke the record. If you said 714, you knew that was Babe Ruth's home run record. If you said 56, you know it was DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak. You know what I mean? And with these guys now, rather than embracing what came before them, and I'll give you where I'm going with this. And I know they try to do it, but they try to do it in a limited way. Every week in Boston, when they, you know, like tonight, the Seattle Mariners just left. They had three games, right? And now they have four games with Chicago starting tonight. Every start of every series, they bring back a star, just like, you know, coming back from
to acknowledge someone from the past, yeah.
Yeah, so Dwight Evans is there this weekend. Last weekend, Freddie Lynn was there. And then it's going to be Louis Tiant down the line. So they keep you with your child. I mean, I had an out-of-body experience at Fenway Park one time. It was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. It unites your family together. It unites history together. They've gone from forgetting, you know, they got a statue of Bruno Sammartino. When's the last time you've heard Bruno's name?
Yeah, we haven't seen him or heard about him in a while.
Okay.
They have so many guys from the past that could offer something, even if it's just promotional stuff. Or we had a question from Jason this week asking, like, who at the Performance Center, they've signed all these great athletes, who's there teaching psychology?
Nobody.
And, I mean, I'm going to nominate Kevin Sullivan. I'll just throw that out there. But, I mean, and there's plenty of guys that could do it. But, you know, it's a good point. They do have these great athletes, but who's there teaching old school money drawing psychology? And I can't think of anyone.
I'm going to give you a funny story. 2 years ago, I was at a convention, and I walked up. There was a by check before you checked in. There was a little open bar, and Jerry Briscoe was with his son Wes, who I happen to really, really like. And Jerry was holding court, and he asked these fans as Jerry's, "Who do you think should be the world heavyweight champion for the WWE?" Everybody's coming up with a name. And I just walk by because I'm walking to the elevator. I walk by and I say, "Barry Wyatt." He said, "Oh, you don't count. You're from Florida. You know what's going on." You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a whole line of guys out there that they could teach interviews. And not the same interview. We've mentioned this before. Zbyszko, you know, you don't appreciate Zbyszko's interviews until you hear them enough. You know what I mean? Until you see them enough. And he can switch on a dime whether he's a heel or a babyface. There's a lot of people out there with a lot of knowledge that they're not getting anything from.
Let's go rapid fire for a little bit because we got so many questions to get to. And Rodney wants to know if you're going to write a book, which I would love, by the way. Is that going to happen?
You know, I don't know. A lot of people have hit me up, Rodney, but if you keep on, if you tell me you'll buy 1,600 copies, I'll write one.
Rich in Long Island wants to know, because of your relationship with Mike Graham, did anybody... the way his life ended, did anybody see that coming, or was it a total shock? Obviously a very sad thing.
It was a total shock, but if you look back, like, he had a radio show he did every week, and I was his last guest. And Mike and I were dear friends, but we weren't the gushy kind. And after the show, it was the 13th show he did, he called me and said, "Hey, man, I just want to let you know I love you." And that was, I don't know if it was a Wednesday, Thursday. It was only a couple of days later it happened. He went through hell. He was telling people, "I must have been a good father or a good son." So you look back in hindsight, yeah.
Got a question from Lucas in upstate New York, asking about the lawsuits when you guys got sued because Hall and Nash came over, and even though you didn't use the names Razor and Diesel, they kept some of their mannerisms. Meanwhile, when Bret the Hitman Hart came over, he was able to keep the Hitman name. There were no legal issues there. Wants to know why that was. I'm going to just go ahead and assume that either, number one, you know, in the 80s that they weren't as strict with guys – you know, signing over naming rights and that kind of stuff. But number two, do you know if Bret Hart, was he using the Hitman moniker before even starting in the WWF? I mean, was he using that up in Canada first?
Wait a minute. Well, didn't he have a screw job? Didn't he screw Vince McMahon? When the other two left, I was in a deposition for days until I told you I didn't write anything down until McDevitt says to me, "You can go home now." They were trying to catch me on everything. I never got called in on anything about Bret.
Right, but I just don't have enough knowledge about Stampede.
You get what I'm getting at?
Was he using the Hitman nickname? Or you're just saying they were afraid to fuck with you guys again because the first time didn't work out well?
I think they were more pissed off at Nash and Hall leaving than Bret.
We got a question from J.M. Turner wanting our thoughts on the Al Wilson, Don Marie, Tori Wilson storyline. I have absolutely no thoughts. I'm assuming it must have been some sort of thing where Tori Wilson's dad was getting with the younger chick. I just don't remember it that well, Kevin. I doubt you have any passionate thoughts on this.
I remember sort of it, but it still says wrestling. I hate to say it.
Here's an interesting question from Eric down here in Florida, wanting to know, and I still do this on shows that I do, and I see it in other companies, but I guess in WWE they don't do it anymore. What happened to heels using foreign objects that had been tucked in their tights?
Boy, if they did away with that, I would never have had half the matches I did. You know what I mean? I actually had a match with this Matt Tremont, who our friends, if you hear his name, Google him up, YouTube him. The kid is terrific, okay? terrific. And it was funny. I was supposed to pull out the spike, and he has a barbecue fork, and he's supposed to pull out the fork, and we have a standoff, and then somebody jumps him. Well, during this melee of me and him walking around the building and me throwing chairs and taking him into the ladies' room, because Vice was filming, and I figured as many chairs I threw at his head, I sure to get on TV with the
You'll have to keep us posted on when that airs.
Yeah.
So, but do you have any idea of why WWF phased that out or when they phased that out? Because I don't know.
I'm sort of saying, don't you kind of where I was going with that story is I kind of think they don't want to offend anybody, them being PG. And Austin used to use them, and now that was a great question.
I know in recent years, at one point there was this concerted effort to reestablish the credibility of the referees. And I do wonder if they felt like maybe it made the ref look bad because, you know, the ref is supposed to check you. I don't know if they still show that on camera or not. But so if you've got a spike in your sock, why did the ref not catch that? If you've got brass knuckles by your cock, I mean, why did the ref not catch that? So I don't know if that's an element of it. Another thing I've wondered, if anyone knows, you know, write us in if you know the last time WWE did a finish where someone pulled something out of their tights. I don't know if in the past 9/11 world where now, you know, there's so much more pat downs and airport security and, you know, you go to a concert or something and you're being patted down. As pat downs became a more accepted part of our society, maybe it became less believable that someone would get away with sneaking something in like that?
That's a great thing that I never thought about. It's that I went to a Mariners game about a month ago, and I just realized that they pat me down for the first time. You know, they used to look in your bag to make sure you didn't have alcohol, but I was patted down. You know what I mean? Lightly, they had the scanner. And
they're not sticking a thumb up anywhere, it's invasive. Jonathan wants to know whose idea it was to make Ming the bodyguard of Robert Parker.
That was before I got there. Okay. There was a booking committee, and it was Colonel Parker, Bill Dundee, Greg Valentine, Greg Gagne, and I believe Rick.
We got a question from White Rabbit. One question for you, one question for me. Wants to know, how did you plan the angle where you hit Bob Roop's father? I believe this was for Big Time Wrestling.
Bob Roop's father.
I don't know if you told the story on the show or not, but give us the quick version if he didn't hear it.
Okay. We actually got San Francisco back on its feet when Patterson and Ray Stevens left, and Roy was going out of his mind. I did this deal where I got there and I said, I'm only here for a short time until I can wrestle Roop. And the thing was, Roop was evading me, and it was that he was like a part of a member of the family. And my younger brother was a wrestler, and he broke my brother's shoulder with the shoulder breaker, and my brother couldn't wrestle anymore. And we had my father come out. And my father God bless his soul, my father did an incredible job, you know, because it looked real, you know what I mean? And what happened was I beat Roop for the U.S. title, and when I did, my dad came in the ring, you know, to congratulate me, and Roop nailed me, and I got tied in the ropes, and he gave my dad the shoulder breaker. And we did that there, and we later on did it in Knoxville. So that was the gimmick.
And he wants to know what was my favorite match of my career. I'm sure I've mentioned this match before on the show. My favorite match of my career was intergender tag team match. I teamed up with Cookie, who was in TNA at the time for the Jersey Shore gimmick they were doing. And we took on X-Pac and Santana. Was the number one non-WWE girl in the world right now.
Right.
And it was just a real fun match, man. You know, I've said this before. What I brought to the table as a wrestler and what I think is best for business of me as a booker or promoter, two very different things. I was basically a comedy wrestler for most of my career. And there's a place for that, you know, lower on the card. But I think sometimes people confuse that with what I prefer in terms of what I think should work on top. You know,
right.
For me, you have to maximize your skills. You have to be honest looking at your skills and weaknesses. It's a fat piece of shit. I was never going to be a heavyweight champion of the world caliber guy. I mean, the fact that I won a world tag team title is kind of ludicrous to begin with. So I liked the Gaga because I thought it played to my strengths as a performer. And X-Pac, as you know, was just so easy to work with. So that to me was a lot of fun. We have a question here from Grayson, who wants to know, what was the thought process behind the scaffold match? Obviously, we don't see it anymore. It's so dangerous. But what were people thinking back when we had scaffold matches?
Grayson, here's what I think they're thinking. I think they had a friend that had some real good weed, and they went at night and were watching a horror movie or a construction video, how to build your own home, and they were smoked out of their mind and came up with that. I never would have gotten on that.
This question is from King Kumga. I'm going to assume that's not his real name, who has heard you and I talk about some of the similarities between pro wrestling booking and comic book booking, and wants to know if we think WWE could benefit from bringing in comic book writers as opposed to TV show writers. I mean, it's tough for me to answer that just because I don't read modern comic books, and for all I know, now the booking is just as ridiculous as WWE wrestling. So, but I, you know, an old school comic book writer that knew how to get over new villains, I'd be all for that. I just don't pay enough attention to comics right now to know of any writer that I would recommend or anything like that.
I don't want to keep agreeing with you, but I mean, I haven't been reading new comic books. But I was looking in, I have the history of American comics, it's 3 inches thick. And the crazy thing was I bought it in Scotland. It was sold to me by a German kid. So, if you could write like that and get a heel over, absolutely.
Let's find at least one thing that we disagree about, because we do get comments sometimes, and maybe some fans think this is some sort of shtick that we do, where, you know, we always agree. And guys, you got to understand, like, as a radio personality, the best thing for radio is it would actually be conflict, you know, but one of the things I think that we try to do here in MLW is our shows are all just very honest, and maybe it would make for a better show if you and I were fighting. But I think what made us friends was just that our philosophies are so similar. But, okay, we'll put our heads together. What's something we disagree on?
Well, here's something, Em, I'm going to ask you about.
Okay.
Steve Curry, right, the basketball player?
Steph Curry. Yeah.
His wife came out after the sixth game and said, this is a work. Did you see that?
She said it's rigged for money or for ratings.
Yeah, for ratings.
I mean, I agree. Just not rigged in the sense that maybe some people think of rigged being that the players are in on it and the game.
No. And she put it right on the referees.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I agree completely. There's people don't think about how much money is at stake. How could the officials not be pressured by the league to do something that's going to make them an extra $100 million.
Hey, and here's the other thing, Em. This isn't the first time, you know, this has been brought up. They busted a referee.
Very familiar with that. Yeah.
6 or 7 years
ago.
So
is this yet another thing we agree on?
I hope not. Okay. I say she's wrong. Don't expose the business, okay?
Okay. Wait, so you're asking whether she should have said it or whether it's true?
Yeah. I say, I don't care if it's true. She shouldn't have said it. Keep your mouth shut.
Well, I agree with you. Man. I agree with you. All right. If anyone knows anything we disagree on, write in and let us know. We get an email here from Daniel wanting to know why DDP, who the poor guy had the Lord of the Ring moniker for however long, he was supposed to get a title shot. He never did. So what happened to him cashing in his money in the ring or whatever to get his title shot?
The Lord of the Ring came from he's a great self promoter in Florida. Joe Koff, who's now the president, I guess, of Sinclair Ring of Honor, he had a semi-national television program 4 times a year or twice a year. I'm wrong. Twice a year, coming out of Florida, called the Battle of the Belts, and you became the Lord of the Ring when you won the last match, whatever the last match was. And Dusty came up with the idea via me because I read The Lord of the Ring years and years ago. And that's an analogy about World War II. You know, you can look through it. It's England and Germany and France. And oh, so anyway, that he won a ring and, you know, he was wanted to cash it in, but I don't think he did. And he ended up winning not once, not twice, but three times World Heavyweight Champion.
We got a long email from Angelo with some ideas for the brand split, and he's well aware that I'm anti-brand split. But so he wants to throw this idea at us of whether it would be possible for the second brand to be the resurrection of WCW. You would have WWE Raw on Mondays and WCW Nitro on Tuesdays, and I guess you could do another Raw and Nitro war. I think there's possibly a way to do that that might work. I don't think they would consider it in a million years. I just don't think they're going to want to dilute that WWE brand. And, you know, I don't know how USA would feel about it. The only way you could ever pull this off, by the way, is number one, you'd have to bring in Goldberg. You'd have [S2] Right. [S1] To get a few more appearances out of Sting, even if he can't wrestle. Some stuff with Flair to use them to kind of not literally put over the new generation in the ring, but almost like endorse this new generation of stars, maybe some fresh faces that haven't been on the roster yet, guys coming up from NXT. Maybe there's a way to do that. It seems convoluted. Here's the other issue, is at the end of the day, and sometimes I kick myself for giving this so much thought, I don't think there's a way for it to work where you have two shows on weekdays like that. I just don't think it works. So they can try every formula, move from Thursday to Friday, move back to Thursday, move to Tuesday, do this or that. At some point, they've got to realize, and we say this all the time, if you have a life, you know, Fridays usually you go out. That's the slowest day for TV. Yeah. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you got four main TV days. If you have a life, you're not devoting 50% of your TV nights to pro wrestling. You're just not.
You're right. And I think you hit the nail. The big nail on the head is they're not going to put any name up there but WWE, because lo and behold, if the WCW actually took off as an alternative brand and the people got behind it, great question, a lot of thought process behind it. But Em and I, knowing the heads of it, oh, I don't think they'd do it in a million years. Great idea, but they're not going to do it.
Got a question from DC. Wants to know, at the peak of WCW, who, in your opinion, were the wrestlers that were spending the most time studying film? I mean, we see that in other sports, a lot of times studying film. I don't know in wrestling, but it's as common. The younger guys, I'm sure, hopefully make sure to do it. But did you have any older guys that were watching a lot of tape trying to recycle ideas?
I think so. I think Sting was one of them. I think Rick Steiner was another one. Buff Bagwell, you know what I mean? There were some guys that did. Oh, Paige. Jesus, Paige filmed everything from him getting up in the morning till him taking a dump till him brushing his teeth. I mean, he had everything mapped out. So, yeah, there were some guys, and now I'm sure there are guys. Here's the bad part, and we keep on bringing up them. Okay. The Red Sox have this guy, David Price. He's the highest paid pitcher in the history of baseball, okay?
Okay.
They bring him over. He's supposed to be the savior, right? He can't get a guy out for the first three games, right?
Okay.
He goes and looks at all the film, studies at all the film. The guy that's almost directly behind him is the second baseman, Dustin Pedroia, right? While he's looking at the film, he comes up to him and says, "Hey, I've been watching you lately." He said, "You don't come over exactly like you do in your overarm movement, right?" Instantaneously, he wins seven out of the last eight games. So he had to have somebody, even though he's looking at the shit, to say, "You're off because of this." Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think one of the... Go ahead, sorry.
And one of the things is, when we're watching ourselves, we have a tendency to put our shit over it. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what I was going to say. One of the real keys in wrestling, in my opinion, and I would always go back and meticulously watch my matches over and over, is when you're in the ring, there's so much going on in your head, you know, from having to listen to the crowd of what's the next move and doing this and doing that, where's the referee, that you think something looked sweet and it might have looked like shit, or you might think something looked like shit and it actually looks sweet. It's very difficult when you're in there to know how a lot of stuff looked, and the only way to know is to go back and study the tape.
I agree with you 100%. You know what I mean? I looked at some shit one time, and I thought Dusty and I tore the joint down, and they had taken a camera to Orlando, and I was getting heat on Dusty, and I did this thing where I leaped to the second rope and came down with a chop, and I thought it looked like a gazelle. I looked like a goddamn cat trying to get away from a rabid dog, you know what I mean? I thought, wow, did I misplace that one, you know what I mean? And, you know, it's hard for people in this business to look at themselves objectively. And I like that idea of having somebody that you respect or admire or has some knowledge to help you.
We've apparently got a correction here. Okay. A fan has written in to let us know that Victor Zangief and Salmon Hashimikov from Starrcade 1990 were Greco-Roman wrestlers from Russia. We're not from Minnesota. I don't know what's true or what's not, or if they trained in Minnesota at some point. But that is the claim of Garmami from Ontario.
Okay. Emma, I'm going to make a little thing about that. I think they came over, now that I've got some cobwebs woken up, I think they came over here and went and trained with Brad Riggins, because they were thinking about opening wrestling over in Russia, but almost like, you know, it was work amateur wrestling with a little pro wrestling.
And they started in New Japan. I don't know how often they wrestled in the U.S. So, but you're saying when they came to the U.S., they did some training in Minnesota?
Yeah, and I think that this was an idea, whether it was, I wasn't privy to who it was either Gagne's or maybe even Eric's or New Japan to open up wrestling. It would be a virgin territory. So why do you have to do the gimmicks? You know what I mean? It's like UFC, just give them good, hard shit.
Yeah, and I have no idea one way or the other. So I couldn't give an answer at all. But I did read somewhere that one of those guys was like a Minnesota State karate champion. I don't know if that's true or not. So the mystery continues. We get a question here from Mike in Toronto. The question is about Big Cass. Everybody likes to talk about how Vince McMahon must love him. First of all, I think he's pretty good athletically, but I can't see him reaching world champion level. You know, Mike, I think it's too soon to say. To me, I want to find out what someone's level is naturally. I like to push a guy until his level of overness is no longer justified by the push. So yeah, we don't know what his level is yet. I do see him having – I haven't seen anything yet that tells me he can't be. You know, whereas a guy like Baron Corbin, I already know there's nothing there. With Big Cass is a giant question mark in my opinion.
Hey, Em, I'm going to interrupt real quick, okay? Did you happen to see the skit of John Cena playing Hulk Hogan?
No. When was this? This is recent?
Yeah, it was on a show. I forget what show it was, but I got it on the computer. It was, they were casting people to play Hulk Hogan, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm just looking it up online now, John Cena's Hulk Hogan impression. I'll have to watch this when we get off the air.
Brother, it was brutal. It was about him with the camera, you know. Brother, I've been banging and clanging with the 24-inch pythons. Is the camera going to be on? And Cena, I was laughing my ass off. But I thought, wow, Hogan still must have real serious heat with them to for them to have Cena do that. You know what I mean? I want you to watch it.
We got a question from Justin about Sami Zayn's appearance. We've talked about it on several MLW shows before. Yeah, I mean, I he doesn't look like a star to me. He's incredible in the ring. I thought he had such a good gimmick on the Indies and in Ring of Honor as El Generico. Been a big fan of his forever, have called a bunch of his matches. I was very upset when they took the mask off him. Some guys just have more potential with the mask. Think he's one of them. If people disagree, that's cool. But yeah, I'm not not thrilled with his look right now. Rob in Chicago wants Kevin, give us a quick Gypsy Joe story.
Gypsy Joe, I mean, he was hard as nails. This is funny. One of the first places I was ever sent to, I was sent to Gypsy Joe. He was Gene and Jan Madrid in West Virginia. They owned the territory, and I was sent there. And I saw him have a match with a guy named Hoss Strickland. And the match was like when Rock handcuffed Mick and beat him with the chairs. It was brutal. Hoss just beat Joe to death, and Joe would be saying, harder, harder, harder. I mean, he was, still is, a tough old guy.
RHP, which apparently is a fan that met you in New Jersey last week, wants to know, how did you originally come up with the idea for the Golden Spike?
The Golden Spike. I came up with that idea because, you know, to kill a vampire. I was into horror movies, the vampire. Now I'm the vampire with a golden spike, you know. I'm going to pull it off on humans.
Captain Catfish, I don't know what his parents were thinking with that name, wants to know if you think that William Regal got a big enough push in WCW.
Yes and no. I would have liked to push them more, but unfortunately, at that time, everything was rating-driven, and Regal is a kind of guy, because he's so technical, it needs him a little bit longer to get over, but once he gets over, he's huge. But we weren't given that opportunity to take, okay, we can lose this 15-minute segment. Nah, Eric wasn't going to allow it. But Regal was one of my favorites. Always a solid match. Great guy. Great person. And I really enjoyed him.
Salvatore is asking about the old, you know, loose handshake means you're loose in the ring and stiff handshake means you're stiff in the ring. Wanting to know if guys still do that. Yes, some guys do. I think kind of stuff like that kind of fades away. And it's one of those things where you can't find any agreement, because I've met old timers that I really respect that, you know, they were trained by a guy that was trained by a guy that, you know, goes back to 1910 or whatever. And they might do the silly handshake. And then you'll meet someone else who's drawn $10 million that tells you the handshake is bullshit. So I abstain. I don't know how to fucking shake. I give it no thought. I just do a fucking handshake at this point.
Yeah, and here's the thing, that loose handshake, I think that's the last remnants from the carnival.
Yeah, could be, could be.
Yeah.
Aaron in Massachusetts wants to know, during the Monday Night War, were you watching WWF's pay-per-views? Like, were you ordering their shows to see what was going on?
I'm going to tell you something I'm not proud of now, you know what I mean? And maybe I should have, but I didn't watch any of their stuff.
Any of their stuff.
Because I didn't want anything to creep into my head that I would spin off that would look similar. And I know at the time, Austin was so hot. You know, I knew who Austin was, obviously, and I watched his segments. That's why there's no chance that Goldberg doesn't look like Austin. You know what I mean? But other than him, I was trying not to watch this stuff.
Greg was also asking about whether you're going to write a book. I think fans have got to realize, like, Kevin has been, by his own choice, you know, enjoying life on his island. Kevin's been out of the spotlight for over a decade at this point, just enjoying retirement. I know you still do shows on the weekends sometimes, but enjoying the fruits of your labor, man. I mean, you busted your ass full time for decades. You have a beautiful place. enjoying the water and all that. And I think since we've started doing the show together, and reminding people of not just your accomplishments from the past, but still how much you have to offer, how sharp your mind is, I do think, you know, the idea of a book becomes more realistic at some point, you know, because it's out of sight, out of mind. So for all the listeners that we have, and I know there's tens of thousands of you guys, and we appreciate you so much, the more we can spread the word about this show and that Kevin is back, I think the more realistic a book becomes at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I still want to go to Europe and do this show.
So about the Europe thing.
You guys have to figure out how do we do that.
We got a question from Matt. What'd you say?
Nothing else.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
we're laughing so hard I didn't know if you choked.
That's a good line. We got a question from Matt. Some of the fans are really upset that I criticize The Miz. And this is now becoming an ongoing bit, which was not intended. But Matt says, Miz retained the WWE title at WrestleMania over John Cena due to interference by The Rock 5 years ago. 5 years, if you're still letting that keep you from enjoying the stuff he's doing, you need to let it go. It's not keeping me from enjoying his stuff. I know that this guy does not have the potential to draw money. He has been given more opportunities. He has been given larger pushes than the vast majority of wrestlers in the history of pro wrestling. So my point about The Miz is simply, it is a symptom of the problem in WWE that because the company has become so focused on we need company men, we need yes men, that will jump as high as we say through every hoop that we say. And this is the guy that'll get up at 6 a.m. to do the, you know, the Wacky John and Carl Chili morning show in Wisconsin. You end up with the opportunities going to the guys that don't have the potential to draw money. So you say, okay, well, it was 5 years ago, but it still proves that he was given this humongous, humongous push. It didn't work. It's never going to work. If you think he's, you know, somewhat entertaining in the mid-card or this or that, that's fine. But my point is it's a symptom of a larger problem of the fact that the guys that have the potential to draw money, the guys that have the money-drawing personalities are maybe not going to be the easiest to deal with. And so we have to decide as a business of do we want to be a big-time thing that 10 million people love again? Or, and this is their choice, WWE can do whatever the fuck they want, it's their company. Or do we prefer to just have a bunch of cookie cutter guys, you know, basically a roster of underwear models and swimmers that are can have athletically impressive matches, but do not have that spark that makes someone say, fuck yeah, I want a ticket. And you can point to, well, WrestleMania sells 60,000 tickets and this and that. Yeah, but you know what? There used to be millions of people that would pay $60 to see it, and now they only have to pay $9.99, and it looks like they're adding twice as many pay-per-views. So now they're really paying $4.99. So give me the guy, the personality, you know, 4.4 million people paid $100 because Floyd Mayweather knew how to run his mouth. Okay, and if you think that The Miz is over, then just explain to me. If this guy is so great, if he's got this great heat, if he's such a great heel, just explain to me with such a huge push why he was such a big flop. Does it mean he's not a nice guy? Does it mean he can't take you to dinner? Does it mean you can't buy him a beer? But just explain to me if he's so great, why it didn't work.
Well, I think you hit that one on the head.
I was waiting for you to finally disagree.
Okay,
yeah,
okay. Well,
I'm going to just... The greatest of all time.
I'm going to tell you what. I met that Damian Sandow last weekend.
Right, you were telling us, yeah.
And he, you know, boy, if I was, you know, this is no disrespect. How did they let him go and keep the other one? You know what I mean? This Sandow looks like a wrestler. He was given a bad gimmick. Try to be a company man, but I think he, not going to say he could draw money on top because I don't know him that well, but he looks like an athlete. He looks like a wrestler, and I'm with you on this one, Em.
Robert wants to know why Mick Foley in WCW as Cactus Jack would carry a book to the ring that said, I am in desperate need of advice.
It's in the book. He used to say, it's in the book. We were going to do something before he got on the whatever, before he made his escape. We were going to do something with the book. He was going to have something in the book. And actually, at the time, we were heading towards him being a babyface. He was going to take that, what was ever in the book, and nail me. And he was going to, we were heading towards it's in the book.
Johnny in England wants to know why WWE has never had a British heavyweight champion of the world. I'm going to assume they've had very few non-American or Canadian, I guess non-North American heavyweight champions of the world to begin with, right? I mean, I'm sure maybe there's been some, but I don't know if Inoki's reign counts or not. But why has there never been a British world champion?
Well, you guys have taken over the world at different times, and you screwed it all up. You know what I mean? From India, China, you know, you got the opium and got every Chinaman hooked. I mean, India, just kidding. I just don't know why, in my head, that they hadn't had title changes, like they said, for an English wrestler to win at Wembley Stadium. I mean, it would be huge.
Andrew wants to know if you can give us a quick story about wrestling in the Bahamas.
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed the Bahamas. I lived there for 9 months. The Bahamas were great, but I'll tell you a story. We used to wrestle outside in Nassau in this arena that was open air. And they actually cemented broken glass bottles on the top of the arena, the blocks that were the top of the arena. The fans would sit on those pieces of glass. They knew how to put their weight on it. Only time I ever saw Ming go down, I'll tell you two stories. They used to sit on the roof of our dressing room, and you'd have to run, if you were heeled, to the ring. Ming was coming back, and he's Ming, and he ain't running from anybody. And someone took a cinder block and threw it from the roof, hit him in the head, wow. And cracked in two. He didn't go down, but he staggered in. The other one was Jake was wrestling. We all kind of stayed together there. But Jake had some heat with a lot of the boys at the time, you know, which we all did at time to time. And all the boys left and left Jake in the last match with a babyface, Tyree Pride. And even though he put Tyree Pride over, Jake came in the building where he dressed, and the fans started coming through. And he crawled underneath an old wrestling mat, and they beat it like sticks, like you were going to kill cockroaches. Oh, it was horrible.
Anthony wants our thoughts on deathmatch wrestling. I know you've participated in some of that over in Japan.
Yeah. I mean, I think the whole thing in my head really got out of hand. You know, when that time they had the barbed wire and the Sheik and Tarzan Goto, Sheik and Sabu would suck the oxygen. The Sheik was burnt, third-degree burns. Sabu got second-degree burns. I mean, they were headed down a horrible path. Great idea, but a horrible path where they're lucky that's all that happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, my friends and I were obsessed with, we had a bootleg of the King of the Deathmatch tournament where it's Cactus Jack and Terry Funk and all these guys and Leatherface and Tiger Jeet Singh. And at the time, as a kid, I thought it was like the coolest thing ever. And they say, you know, that males, especially as they get older, they become more conservative. And when that show was actually finally officially released in the United States, I had the honor, I'm sure I've mentioned it before, of doing the English commentary for that show. And this is a show, you know, I'd seen it 100 times with my buddies. We thought it was the coolest thing ever. And then I hadn't seen it in years. And so when I sat down to call this thing, I got to be honest, I was kind of like disgusted. And I don't know just if my tastes have changed or, you know, you get older and you start to think, like, these are real people. They're setting yourself on fire or falling on nails. And it makes me very uneasy now. I don't like it. But I'd be lying if I didn't say that, you know, when I was 12, I thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen.
Great answer.
We just got a few more here. I know we got to go. But we got a question about someone that grew up in North Carolina that religiously watched MACW. This is not a promotion I'm familiar with. You know what he's talking about?
No, but I think that is that MACW, the one from Maryland. No, MACW would be Mid Atlantic Championship Wrestling.
That would make sense. I've heard of Mid Atlantic. Yeah. I've never thought of it as MACW. Okay, so Mid Atlantic Championship Wrestling. Assuming that's what he's talking about. He's from Carolina. Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Oh, I thought when they brought Wahoo and Valentine in, and Roddy was there, and Mark Lewin and the Ricky Steamboat and Youngblood and Ric Flair. I mean, it was great. Great talent.
Got an interesting question from Troy in New York. I mean, I think we're in agreement that when Seth Rollins came back recently, he should have been a babyface. That's what the crowd wanted. And so Troy is just asking, if they had decided to bring him back as a babyface, could you just turn him baby based on like the documentary style vignettes of what had happened to him and how hard it was for him to train to return? Or would they still have had to do something to turn him babyface? And that's a good question. I mean, for me personally, since he left as a heel, I don't care how many videos you show, I would still like him to return in a scenario where there's that moment of truth of, you know, he could either do the wrong thing or the right thing, and you're not sure which he's going to pick, and you still physically see him pick doing the right thing to officially cement it. I don't like guys just being brought back and their affiliation has switched with no reason given. So, Troy, yeah, that's a good question. Kevin, I don't know how you feel about that. Of can you turn someone baby or heel just using vignettes, or should there still be that moment where the fans get to see the gears turning in their head where they actually chose the light side or the dark side?
I'm with you, Em. I think you can set it up with vignettes, but the close has to be you see him do something good or bad. You know, it has to be visual.
Okay, last question, because I know we're over time here. Corey in Texas wants to know if you can just give a quick story involving you yelling, "More heat, more heat, more heat," while watching the show on the monitor in the back.
Terry Taylor used to imitate me. I'm watching at the time that Nash and Hall are coming in and they're jumping on the horsemen. And, of course, they were going to put the horsemen over in Charlotte a week later, and they were laying them out, Arn, Rick, and I'm saying to myself, boy, this is hot, and I'm yelling, more heat, like I could be talking to them, you know? And I didn't have to tell those two more heat, you know what I mean? They were going to burn the place down. So, yeah, I'm just under the maybe delusional, but if you don't become a fire-breathing dragon, he never becomes
right.
The knight.
And I think for my booking, you know, and it's tougher when it's month to month and I don't have the mini chapters in between to lead to the showdown. But I do have to get better about being more patient with building the heat before I give the babyface make sure the babyface dishes out the comeuppance. So that's something I'm going to focus on more in the coming months. Is more. I'm going to stick that in my head. More heat, more heat, more heat. So I'm glad we got that question, and I'll let you know how it turns out, Kevin. I think I'm not pouring enough heat on my heels. So I'm going to work on that. Fans, I hope you enjoyed this supersized edition of MSL and Sullivan. Of course, we'll be back next week. If you're interested in Kevin Sullivan memorabilia, send an email to kevinsullivanbooking@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at MSL. I'm on Instagram as well at MSL if you have any questions about the show or anything like that. And if you guys have not gone VIP yet, what are you waiting for? Head to mlwradio.com right now for just $1.99 a month. You get exclusive shows with Jim Cornette, Court, the History in the Making series, stuff with Conan, all sorts of incredible exclusive content just for the VIP listeners. So go to mlwradio.com. It's definitely worth it. I've never heard from anyone that went VIP and ended up regretting it. So do that right now. Kevin, we wish you well on your trip. We will talk to you next week so that we hear all about it. On behalf of Kevin Sullivan, Mr. St. Laurent here saying thank you so much for listening.